Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Shaivam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayet Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shlokir Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading from Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam, his translations and purports, 4th canto, 27th chapter, 11th text. Kakatu bir gorai,
Jichakratu bir gorai,
Dikshita pashumarakai,
Dikshita pashumarakai,
Devan pitrin putapatin,
Devan pitrin putapatin,
Nanakamo yata bhavan,
Nanakamo yata bhavan,
Ijechakatu bir gorai,
Ijechakatu bir gorai,
Dikshita pashumarakai, Devan pitrin putapatin,
Devan pitrin putapatin,
Nana kamo yata bhavan,
Nana kamo yata bhavan.
Great sage Narada continued, "My dear King Prachina Bharisha, like you, King Paranjan also became implicated in so many desires. Thus he worshipped demigods, forefathers, and social leaders, with various sacrifices which were all very ghastly because they were inspired by the desire to kill animals responsibly." The great sage Narada continued.
The great sage Narada continued.
In this verse, the great sage Narada discloses that the character of Paranjan was being described to give lessons to King Prachina Bharisha. Actually, the entire description was figuratively describing the activities of King Prachina Bharisha. In this verse, Narada frankly says, "like you, Yatha Bhavan," which indicates that King Paranjan is none other than King Prachina Bharisha himself. Being a great Vaishnava, Narada Muni wanted to stop animal killing and sacrifices. He knew that if he tried to stop the king from performing sacrifices, the king would not hear him. Therefore, he is describing the life of King Paranjan. But in this verse, he first discloses the intention, although not fully, by saying, "like you." Generally, the karmis, who are attached to increasing descendants, have to perform so many sacrifices and worship so many demigods for future generations, as well as to satisfy so many leaders, politicians, philosophers, and scientists to make things go on properly for future generations. The so-called scientists are very eager to see that future generations will live very comfortably. And as such, they are trying to find different means of generating energy to drive locomotives, cars, airplanes, and so on. Now they are exhausting the petroleum supply. These activities are described in the Bhagavad Gita, 2:41. Vyavasaya mika hudhir, ekeha kuru nandana, bahushaka hirantascha, buddhayo vyavasayana. Those who are on the spiritual path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Actually, those who are in knowledge of everything are determined to execute Krishna consciousness. But those who are rascals, mudha, sinners, duskritina, and the lowest of mankind, naradama, who are bereft of intelligence, maya parita jnana, and who take shelter of the demonic way of life, asuram bhavam ashrita, are disinterested in Krishna consciousness. As such, they become implicated and take on so many activities. Most of these activities center around the killing of animals. Modern civilization is centered around animal killing. Karmis are advertising that without eating meat, their vitamin value or vitality will be reduced. So to keep oneself fit to work hard, one must eat meat. And to digest meat, one must drink liquor. And to keep the balance of drinking wine and eating meat, one must have sufficient sexual intercourse to keep fit to work very hard like an ass. There are two ways of animal killing. One way is in the name of religious sacrifices. All the religions of the world, except the Buddhists, have a program for killing animals in places of worship. According to Vedic civilization, the animal eaters are recommended to sacrifice a goat in the temple of Kali under certain restrictive rules and regulations and eat the flesh. Similarly, they are recommended to drink wine by worshipping the goddess Chandika. The purpose is restriction. People have given up all this restriction. Now, they are regularly opening wine distilleries and slaughterhouses and indulging in drinking alcohol and eating flesh. A Vaishnava Acharya like Narada Muni knows very well that persons engaged in such animal killing in the name of religion are certainly becoming involved in the cycle of birth and death, forgetting the real aim of life, to go home, back to Godhead. Thus the great sage Narada, while instructing Srimad Bhagavatam to Vyasa Muni, condemned the karmakanda, fruitive activities, mentioned in the Vedas. Narada told Vyasa, Jugupsitam dharma krite mushashata svabhava raktasya mahan vitaki vyatikrama yadvakyato dharma ititarasti ito namanyate tasya nivarnanam jana. The people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy, and you have encouraged them in that way, in the name of religion. This is verily condemned and is quite unreasonable. Because they are guided under your instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. From the Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 5th Chapter, 15th Verse. Srila Narada Muni chastised Vyasadeva for compiling so many Vedic supplementary scriptures, which are all intended for guiding the people in general. Narada Muni condemned these scriptures because they do not mention direct devotional service. Under Narada's instructions, direct worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, was set forth by Vyasadeva. The conclusion is that neither the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, nor his devotee ever sanctions animal killing in the name of religion. Indeed, Krishna incarnated himself as Lord Buddha to put an end to animal killing in the name of religion. Animal sacrifice under the name of religion is conducted by the influence of tamoguna, the mode of ignorance, as indicated in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 18:31-32. Ya dharmam adharmam cha karyam chakaryam eva cha ayatavat prajanati buddhisa partha rajasi adharmam dharmam itiya manyite tamasavrita sarvartham viparitamcha buddhisa partha tamasi. That understanding which cannot distinguish between the religious way of life and the irreligious, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, that imperfect understanding, O son of Krita, is in the mode of passion. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness, and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Those who are involved in the mode of ignorance manufacture religious systems for animal killing. Actually, dharma is transcendental. As Lord Sri Krishna teaches, we must give up all other systems of religion and simply surrender unto him. Sarva dharman parityaja. Thus the Lord and his devotees and representatives teach the transcendental dharma, which does not allow animal killing. At the present moment, it is the greatest misfortune that in India, many so-called missionary workers are spreading irreligion in the name of religion. They claim an ordinary human being to be God and recommend meat eating for everyone, including so-called sannyasis. Om Mangyana Timaram Dusyagana Manjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guru Venma Sri Chaitana Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swami Pakadamayam Tadakri Svapadam. So Prabhupada mentions here that this is the first point in time during his recounting of the story of King Paranjana, which is, as he says, metaphorical and allegorical, that it actually applies to the listener, King Pachinabharisha. Narada Muni is known for being traveling all over the world and being privy to the plan of the Lord before everyone else is. And thus he presaged the arrival of Krishna 5,000 years ago by disclosing it to Kamsa, letting him in on the secret that the Lord was actually going to advent in his original form. And he did this because he wanted to accelerate Krishna's plan of annihilating the wicked regime, Parijanaya Sadhunam Vina Chayachu Duskritam. He wanted the Duskritinas to be vanquished as soon as possible. So, as Prabhupada mentions here, if he tried to stop King Prachinabharisha from doing things, he may have resisted. But instead, he figuratively, as Prabhupada said, describes the activities of King Paranjana. Being a great Vaishnava, Prabhupada writes, Narada Muni wanted to stop animal killing and sacrifices. He knew that if he tried to stop the king, if he tried to stop the king from performing sacrifices, the king would not hear him. So another quality of Narada Muni that's being brought out here is that he was an expert in understanding the psychology of speech according to time, place, and circumstance. Austerity of the tongue is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Anudvegam karam vakyam satya priya hitam chayat svadvayam vyasanam chayvam svadvayam vanmayam tapa uchite. One has to speak a satya priya hitam chayat with truth, in a pleasing way, in a way that is not disturbing to anyone, satya priyahitam chayat. One, and in a way that is always referencing the Vedic literature. So one has to speak the truth, at the same time one else has to speak in such a way that is pleasing. Satya priya. That's very difficult sometimes. When Prabhupada sometimes spoke to people, he was very forthright. And if someone was inimical, one person anyway, he called him a demon. He said, "You're a demon." But he said it in such a way that the man laughed. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, I," afterwards, after he left, he said, "Yes, I called him a demon." And he appreciated it.
Yeah.
So he knew. But this, of course, is a great art possessed by Narada Muni. Also, when Sutta was taking his seat in the assembly, he was addressed by Shanaka Rishi and given a proper sitting place. He was addressed in a certain way. Shanaka was the leader of the assembly, and so on. So a certain etiquette was observed there. This is described in the first canto, first chapter. And he spoke according to his realizations. And Prabhupada describes in the purport that the meaning of realization is that one speaks without diluting or compromising the subject matter in any way. Yet at the same time, he speaks in a pleasing manner so that the audience can best understand. according to the situation, according to the time, the place, and the circumstance. So these are some of the qualities of the Mahabhagavats, the great souls. And the Mahajans, they also spoke like this. Prahlad addressed his father. He's one of the Mahajans. Greatest of the demons. Very truthful. Of course, Rani Kashyapu didn't like it. But this is one of the qualities, the truthfulness. But he did like it in a way, because after all, it was his son, and he asked him to speak. Bhishma was another Mahajan who, when he was on his bed of arrows, he very adroitly addressed each person present before him exactly according to the way that person wanted to be addressed. He addressed Krishna as Parthasarathi because he had that rasa with Krishna, the rasa of chivalry. So he addressed him as the great warrior chariot driver. And in the case of each person there, he addressed them very properly, according to their desire and according to proper Vedic etiquette. Even though he was in the most painful condition imaginable, shot full of arrows, hundreds of arrows, and all the blood draining out. This is a little off the topic, but there's a nice story in the Mahabharata. That section, by the way, of where he speaks is a very long part of the Mahabharata. He's so composed through this painful experience that he's speaking perfect philosophy. It's a whole parva in the Mahabharata, speaking on religious principles, Bhishma. So anyway, one of these Mahabharata stories goes that as he was speaking like that, everyone was very pleased and happy at his mellifluous, is the English word, speech, very flowing, beautiful, artistic, poetic speech, and also very precise philosophically. He noticed that Draupadi, who'd come there, was smiling sardonically. She had this kind of ironic smile on her face. And he said, why are you smiling at a time like this? And she said, when I was in the assembly of the Kurus and they were attempting to disrobe me, you sat there poker-faced, you were expressionless, you didn't move, you didn't raise a hand, a great Kshatriya, grandfather of our clan, you didn't try to protect me. And now you're speaking about the highest religious principles. So that's why I was smiling. So he said, actually, I was a guest at the house of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. I had to make compromises to live with them. And the worst of all compromises was I had to eat their food. I couldn't eat prasadam. And I had to suffer for that. But now, all the blood has drained out of my body. And I've been relieved of that contamination of their food. And now that I'm free of that contamination, I think I can speak properly. So the material world, I'm going to try to segue this into this verse, is full of contamination. And we have to drain ourselves of this contamination. This story is of one who is filled with the contamination, King Paranjan. He's expanding his empire, his family, and he's becoming more and more deeply implicated and involved in the material world. It's very easy to do. Prabhupada talks about the scientists. They're eager to see that future generations will live comfortably. I was noticing this furniture store down below. There's so many different places to sit. They're selling sofas, a place, sofa, it's called Sofa 3. Hundreds of different things you can sit on just to be comfortable. Different colors, different shapes, different feelings. All different ways. I mean, how many different ways can you sit? I remember Prabhupada saying, you just sit on the floor. Just get a little mat and sit on the floor and you'll be very comfortable. We're so comfortable sitting on the floor. When people walk into this furniture store and there's hundreds of different ways to sit, this way, that way, laying down, sitting up, head tilted this way, head tilted that way. You know, bright colors, soft colors, and black colors, and for the office, and for the house, and for the different waiting rooms, and doctor's offices, But how many ways can you sit down? You just sit on the floor. It's the most comfortable thing. Otherwise, you have to think, oh, I want to have my legs up. Do I want to have... And there was one they had that you lean back and your legs go up. They had a picture of an elderly lady sitting there smiling. How nice it was that she could lean back in his chair with the legs going up. Special opening chair. But there's a great deal of energy that goes into producing all of this. You actually have to employ scientists to understand, you know, what's the most comfortable thing to sit on, what feels the best. They employ psychologists to see what the right colors are so they'll feel very nice in the kitchen or feel very nice in the living room, feel very nice in the bedroom, in the office. So Prabhupada mentions this, that the scientists are very eager to see future generations will live comfortably. Everything is based on comfort. Everyone wants this comfort. And it's very easy to look around places like in Germany or these developed countries or very wealthy countries and see someone driving a nice new Mercedes. And actually we become, even we're devotees, we become a little attracted. We think, that's really a nice car. I'd like to be driving that car. Or, you know, maybe if I could have a car like that, I could get to Berlin faster, or I could do my service. So it's a very subtle thing. Or we see something beautiful and we're just unconsciously attracted. Oh, that's a very beautiful man or woman. Or a very beautiful house. I'd like to live in such a nice house. And we're attracted by so many things. Especially it's difficult because we're using these things for Krishna consciousness. We're using these computers and cars. So it's very easy to become contaminated, to see it and think, I want it for my own enjoyment instead of to give to Krishna, to serve Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada was always condemning civilization. Sometimes we would think, why is he so against everything? Why is he so against everybody? They're always mudhas, they're always rascals. I looked up in this computer program. It's called Folio. You can look up the words. And I wanted to see how many times Prabhupada used the word rascal in his books, and it was 600 times. Rascal and rascaldom in the lectures and the books. And so many times. And then he would sometimes ask devotees, so are you convinced that this civilization is hell? He would ask devotees, especially in the developed countries, are you convinced? Are you completely convinced that this civilization is demonic, that everything about it is demonic? He would ask them again and again. Because we saw so many devotees, they became, even devotees, initiated devotees, they became attracted to things of this material world. And they wanted a nice job, they earned a lot. And it's a phenomenon. And they weren't really giving much to Krishna. There's still such devotees. They became victimized by this so-called civilization, going and working very hard, the thing that Prabhupada condemned. Don't work hard. It's all right to work hard, but do it for Krishna. So Prabhupada was constantly warning his disciples, don't ever think that this civilization, this material world is a nice place. Don't ever think that it's all right, that people are going in the right direction or that they're telling the truth. He was trying to instill in us a healthy aversion, we might say, a healthy hatred. Not of the souls inhabiting this material world, because they are all worshipable in the sense that they're all devotees, or they're all, at least Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke, they're all connected with Krishna. They're all parts and parcels of Krishna with the potential of being devotees. But the direction that they were going in is condemned. It said, and Prabhupada quoted, one should hate the sin, not the sinner. We don't hate the people, the jivas, but we hate the mentality that they've developed because it is against Krishna. It's in violation of what Krishna is wanting. And a devotee wants nothing more. His surrender means that he wants only what Krishna wants, nothing else. If Krishna wants me to have a nice car, I'll have it. And I'll only think of it as serving Krishna. And if Krishna doesn't want me to have a nice car, I'll feel so happy. I didn't want to get entangled in that horrible, attractive, alluring piece of Maya. It would take me away and try to make me feel very strong, important, powerful, beautiful, happy, and comfortable. And as Prabhupada mentions, he quotes that verse, Vyavasaya Mikavudirya Keha Kuru Nandana. One who is fully Krishna conscious is very fixed. His mind is targeted on Krishna all the time. And therefore, even if he's in a comfortable situation, he never forgets Krishna. And if he's in a very miserable condition, he still never forgets Krishna because he's Vyavasaya Mika Buddha. AK Ha Kuru. He's one pointed, very sharply pointed. AK Ha. And on the other hand, those who aren't focused on Krishna, they must become diverted and their minds must be branched out into many different fields of enjoyment and many different thoughts. And therefore we see when people become bewildered, their minds become disturbed and they can't concentrate. There was that description in the story of Daksha, 6th canto, where Parvati becomes affected by her familial relationships, and she wants to go to the sacrifice. She's eager to see her father, she's eager to see her relatives. And Lord Shiva is advising her, don't go, please don't go. It's very dangerous. Anything very dangerous could happen. So it's described that she vacillates back and forth, and she paces back and forth as a reflection of her mind, walking one way, then turning around and walking another way. And it's described as a swing. You push it and it just keeps going back and forth. So the mind of a materialist, which is not fixed in Krishna consciousness, must necessarily go back and forth and not be set in any solid understanding of who I am, where am I going, what am I doing, who is God, what is time, what are the living entities. They don't know. Even the greatest scientists that are producing all this magnificent technology, they do not know. They do not know who they are, they do not know where they're going, and they do not know what God is. Therefore, the whole thing becomes a big travesty and a tragedy. Just like we were talking about this big Rio conference going on this week. They're all coming together to try to figure out how to clean everything, how to stop all the waste. But at the same time, they're not doing it because they're not Krishna conscious. At the same time, they're resisting it. They can't actually do it. So this is the folly of this civilization. Even when people want to, they can't, because they're thinking that their senses are the ultimate. And they're thinking that this advancement of civilization is the ultimate aim of mankind. It will actually establish man's supremacy over nature and ultimately over God. And this is the reason why people, they can kill animals and not feel any compunction, not feel any guilt. Because as one becomes more and more entangled and certain about one's supremacy and predominant position, ascendant position over everything, then it's natural that all the weaker living beings, including the animals, are for my exploitation. They have to surrender to me. Prabhupada at one point became very disappointed and disillusioned, I might say, with the leaders of many Christian denominations, because they confessed to him that they were not only eating meat, but that they thought it was all right, even by their own scriptures. There was an interview you probably saw with Cardinal Danielu. And he was saying very frankly to Prabhupada, he said that the animals are there, we have to eat them, he was saying, his French way. We have to eat them. We have to. Because we're stronger than they are. So it's God has given us dominion over these animals. We have to eat them. So Prabhupada said, this is the most sinful thing, to be killing animal sacrifice under the name of religion. Very, very, very sinful thing. And whatever scriptural injunctions are there for killing animals, it's a way of restricting. It has to be done once a month on a dark night. So many mantras have to be chanted. And one of the mantras you have to chant if you sacrifice a goat to Kali is, I am now, whisper this mantra in the goat's ear, I am now killing you and telling you that you can come back and kill me in another lifetime. So it's so dangerous. Not only it's bad for you, it's scripturally very prohibitive, prohibited. But one also has to offer that jiva soul the right to come back and kill it. That's one of the mantras that you have to chant when you sacrifice to the goddess Kali. So Prabhupada spends a long part of this purport talking about animal killing being the center of civilization. It's kind of an unusual thing to say, because we see that civilization is so degraded. We don't so much think of animal killing as being the center of it. But it's the center in the sense that it's an expression of man's callousness towards other living beings. He can simply wantonly kill. And many people posit that this is one of the reasons why abortion has become so prominent, so prevalent all over the Western world, and now going into Eastern world as well. It's interesting that